Now, time to meet your own inner sex beast. Have you located it lately? Do you know how to tether it or unleash it? Confounding questions, really, and questions that Pamela Stevenson Connolly urges you to confront in her new book, Sex Life, How Our Sexual Experiences Define Who We Are. The actor, comedian, author, psychologist and sex therapist writes a weekly sexual healing column in the Guardian newspaper these days. She's married to comedian and actor Billy Connolly, and for this latest book, she conducted hundreds of interviews with people of all ages, appetites and backgrounds, discussing their sex life and the issues they confront. Pamela Stevenson Connolly joined me in the breakfast studio earlier this week.
Thank you.
You talk about inner beasties. Is sexuality an uncivilized, threatening and rampant animal within it? Is that how you see it?
Well, I think that there's a level at which we all struggle to sort of put a lid on our sexuality. And there's a good reason for that, because we have to find ways to negotiate those urges because they can't be acted on all of the time. It was really just my way of trying to begin a conversation about that part of us that really is wonderful and thrilling and lifelong, but that many of us struggle with in different ways, whether we're struggling with our libido or whether we're overly interested or underly interested in sex, or it's getting in the way, something about it is getting in the way of having a fulfilling relationship, whether we have an orientation struggle. I mean, there's just so many things that can be on our minds.
And for some, the issue is it's not on their minds enough. I mean, you say struggling to put a lid on it. I think reading your book, the number of people who are struggling to stir the beast, if you like.
Absolutely, I know. And that can be such a painful secret for a lot of people. But there are natural times in a person's life, for example, in a woman's life, when her libido is naturally not going to be very high.
Tell us about that. Tell us because we all talk about a normal sex life, but tell us about a normal pattern to our sex drive. Is there such a thing? Do we peak in our early 20s, plateau, and then does it disappear
There's
as we
no
age?
Such thing as, first of all, as scientists, we don't really know what constitutes normal human sexuality because we have we don't have enough cross-cultural studies to be able to make that call. So I prefer the word normative. I mean, there's a huge range of common normative human sexual behaviors and appetites and styles. And so many of us are so hung up about, you know, the am I normal question. Am I normal compared to other people? Is everybody having more sex than I am? Is everybody having better quality sex than I am?
Does everyone think the answer to those questions are yes?
Yes. Well, many of the people I spoke to, because I spoke to hundreds of people for the book. And what I love doing the job that I do is learning from other people. And I thought it would be a good idea to do a book where the readers could get to know what other people think about sex, because we don't even like to talk about it most of the time. And we do a little giggly session with our girlfriends, or we sort of half-heartedly have a little bit of sex education with our kids, or, you know, we under sufferance have that necessary conversation with our spouses. But I mean, do we ever really have a proper conversation about sex? Very, very rarely. Well, I hope that this book will be illuminating for people.
With the baby boomers aging, you know, people grew up in the 60s and 70s, time of sexual liberation and exploration. Do you think sex for the aged will be a much bigger part of our culture as the baby boomers want to keep the age of Aquarius happening in their
lives? It already is. The trouble is that it's a taboo subject. I mean, most of the people that I spoke to who were in their 70s, 80s and 90s were enjoying sexuality in some form. They actually prioritised it. They thought it was very important. They wanted it as a source of comfort and pleasure, a life-affirming thing. But the taboo about elder sexuality meant that they were finding it difficult. It was difficult for them to avoid the judgment of younger people. They were keeping it from their families because they thought they would be judged. In some cases, I felt particularly sorry for people who were in residential homes where they were not able to get the privacy they needed. So it is a huge taboo, and I think that's really unfortunate, because we can be sexual until the day we die if we want to be.
For some too, though, I noticed that people in long-term relationships, long-term marriages, noting that it gets harder to be sexual with their partner. They've got more embarrassed as the relationship's aged.
Well, some
What's
of them
that
did.
About?
Sometimes it was a communication issue. Sometimes it was a body image issue. But also equally, I mean, those people need to probably, you know, if they want to continue their sexuality, then to be able to have that kind of loving, frank discussion about it. But equally, I found many people who had let go of all the anxiety about sex in their later years. They'd stopped caring about being perfect in terms of their bodies. I mean, they just didn't care anymore. And that was very releasing. And also, kids had flown the nest, so they had more time, more leisure time. They were really enjoying themselves.
What about in the middle years? Because, as you say, this is not a how-to book. It's not based on theories. It's just experiences, maybe the best way of instruction. Are there tips here, say, for parents with infants who find the sex drive disappearing under a mound of dirty nappies, exhaustion, midnight cries?
Well, we tend to think that sex just happens spontaneously, and if we just sort of allow it, then it will. But that's not true if you've got a young family or you're taking care of elderly relatives or whatever. I mean, if you're under stress at work, I actually think you've got to plan it. You've got to sort of prioritize it. Write it in your diary even. Just make sure that it actually happens.
Which is a whole different way of thinking about the beast thing, the animal instinct, isn't it?
It is, but that's part of sort of the right sort of taming the beast, is to give the beast his place. Get to know him, get to know what your urges are, what your styles are, start to feel more comfortable. Don't turn your back on him and give him his place and his time.
Sex and illness, if you're suffering cancer treatment, say, or medications, that it's important to know if medications are going to have effect in your libido, to note that change and understand that change. Antidepressants, for instance, can often do that. What did you find from your letters, the letters and feedback from these people?
Well, first of all, I was really impressed by how important sexuality was to people who were struggling with serious illness, disability and so on, and that those people desperately needed information very often, and unfortunately they didn't always get it. So I would hope that they would be able to speak to physicians and find out what was important. I would like to encourage them to, you know, if it's important to them, and it so often is, it's a life-affirming, it's soothing, it's just important as a quality of life aspect, to be able to insist that they get the help. People suffering from arthritis, for example, you know, how to know what time of day might be the most comfortable for them to be sexual.
You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. Our guest this morning is Pamela Stevenson-Connolly, talking about her new book, Sex Life, How Our Sexual Experiences Define Who We Are. Pamela, if we've talked about there's no such thing as normal, but you do have a mantra. You say, so long as sex is safe, sane and consensual, that's the three yeses in terms of safe sex and what's normal. How does that fit in with our fantasies?
Well, our fantasies are our own, and our fantasies are free for all. We can have whatever fantasies we like, and not everybody has fantasies that are safe, sane, and consensual. In fact, many people don't. What we have to do is simply be comfortable, you know, just understand. I mean, if we're having a fantasy about sexual coercion, for example, then the only real question is, how likely are we to act on that? If the answer is very unlikely, the fantasies are going to stay in our head, then we don't have to worry about them. And we are entitled to have private fantasies that are very edgy and very out there if we want to.
If safe, same and consensual the only rules, what does that mean about the divisions like gay, straight and bisexual?
I've deliberately in this book chosen not to have, you know, the gay section, because sexuality is sexuality, and it gets expressed in many, many different forms. And in many instances, I haven't even identified the person who is writing a particular testimony as being gay, straight, bi, whatever, because I just think it's not important in many ways. Having said that, there are some issues that are very specific. I've talked with gay aging men, for example, have often spoken to me and have spoken to me about the book, about sort of feeling that they're more in a beauty pageant as they age than they were before, and some of those struggles that are very specific.
Last month on Breakfast, we spoke to Gail Dines about her book on pornography, and her argument is that porn has hijacked our sexuality, that the prevalence of violent, abusive images on the internet is limiting those who view pornography, and particularly limiting young people to a very dark and negative expression of sexuality. What's your view of that argument, or your view of pornography and the place of it?
My main concern is that it puts a greater onus on parents, for example, because, you know, our kids are looking at porn, we know that, and we can't stop them because it's there, it's on the internet, it's everywhere. What we need to do is be available to help them make sense of the images that they are going to see. It's a huge requirement now. We have to be able to be an askable parent, to be somebody that our kids can come to and say, I saw something and it was disturbing or it was weird and I'd just like to ask you about that. And to be able to answer that question in an age-appropriate fashion. There's a huge gap, even for teenagers, there's a huge gap, even for people in their 20s, between what they're seeing and what their experience is. And
was there much feedback on that from the people contributed to the book? Did you get much sense of a concern about what's in the internet porn world and what's in the bedroom and how to live up to that?
Yes. I mean, and even in just clinically, I mean, I've had young men come into my practice and say, I think there's something wrong with my girlfriend. She doesn't look like the pictures of the girls that I've seen. I mean, there's a sense
come
that
to the right there's, therapist.
There's a sense that there's a quote unquote norm and it's the visual image that we're seeing in pornography. I mean, I happen to think that there's a place for erotica, but unfortunately we don't have enough healthy conversations and enough of a healthy understanding about sexuality very often to be able to make sense of what we're seeing.
And talking about health, is there a link between health and physical well-being and sexuality? And I think I ask you this from your personal experience recently with being a contestant on the British Strictly Come Dancing, where you did very well. You seem to have a lot of fun. Obviously, you must have been fit to do that or perhaps become fit to do that.
I became fit, yes.
What impact, does that have an impact on your sexuality?
Well, that's well established that physical health can help with sexuality. And in my case, I'd say probably I actually don't have much trouble with libido, and actually I write about sex and talk about sex and think about sex all the time, so it's not something that
does
that
writing about it and thinking about it and talking about it, though, translate to a sex drive?
Yes. Yes, it does. And that's the way it should be, probably. It'd be awful if it worked the other way. I suppose, you know, I'm lucky in that respect. But, well, yeah, my husband likes thin women, so more is the pity. But so I suppose that he started being very appreciative of my new shape. And much as I grit
my
teeth.
Well, a little trouble too, by the bumping and grinding on stage with a man half your age.
Well, that too. And that was quite something. But I do have a good husband because he's very understanding about these things. And I just came back from Argentina. I was learning to do local tango with an Argentine cutie. And my husband fell off his motor trike just before I went, but he's still said, away and tango, you don't have to nurse me. I know how much you've been looking forward to it. And actually, I think that if we can be individuals and be very supportive of each other, I think that in itself is going to make you be stronger as a couple and probably fancy each other a lot more.
Well, there is no golden rule to marital success and a successful couple, but you and your husband have been together, I think, for 30 years. You've had 5 children between you. You spend a lot of time apart because of the careers you have. Is there a recipe, a secret to relationship success? Should one have a contract? Should one have out clauses or just 100% trust?
Well, I don't think there can be 100% trust in it, you know, and that's probably stupidity is 100% trust. I mean, it's naivety. Just because you're married to someone doesn't mean that they're never going to be attracted to somebody else. I mean, what are they going to do with that attraction?
Attraction isn't the issue. I think action is the issue.
Action, exactly, is the issue. But there's a lot of evidence that when people are true individuals and when they continue to develop as individuals and when each partner supports the development of each other as an individual, that you keep your sexuality alive, you keep your relationship alive, you keep finding each other interesting and stimulating. And I think for me, that's been the most important thing about my long life with Billy, is he continues to surprise me. And I would just hate it if he stopped surprising me.
Pamela Stevenson-Connolly, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thanks for having me.
Pamela Stevenson-Connolly, she's a sex therapist these days, and her new book, Sex Life, How Our Sexual Experiences Define Who We Are, is published by Vermilion.